This is CICK News. Today on CICK News, as communities across northern British Columbia continue to grapple with the long-term impacts of industrial development on land and water, the story of the Nechaco River has become a powerful focal point for questions of stewardship, sovereignty, and justice. The documentary Nechaco, It Will Be a Big River Again, brings these issues into sharp focus, tracing the decades-long efforts of the Siksika First Nations and the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation to restore a river system profoundly altered by the construction of the Kenny Dam and the diversion of its waters for industrial use. At the heart of the film is not only an environmental story, but a legal and political one, anchored in the landmark Siksika First Nation and Tsleil-Waututh First Nation versus Rio Tinto Alcan Incorporated, a case heard by the Supreme Court of British Columbia. The decision marked a significant moment in Canadian law, recognizing that First Nations could advance claims for damages related to the destruction of fisheries, which is a critical step in asserting Indigenous rights and title in the context of resource extraction. In this interview, we hear from Liana Patrick, the film's writer and director, as well as Jasmine Thomas, associate producer and stewardship and reconciliation lead for Siksika First Nation. The documentary Nechaco, It Will Be a Big River Again, is playing at the Old Church in Smithers on April 19th at 7 p.m. It is hosted by What Matters in Our Valley.
Hi, I'm Jasmine Thomas. I am a member of Siksika's First Nation Nufkaiwaten Frog Clan, and I am currently acting as the Stewardship and Reconciliation Lead for the Nation and participated as the Associate Producer on the Nechaco film.
Hi, I'm Liana Patrick, and I'm a member of the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation, Frog Clan as well, and I'm also Acadian and Scottish, and I am a professor in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University as well, and I'm the writer and director of Nechaco.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. How did the landscape and communities of the Nechaco region, how did they shape the storytelling approach, but also visual language of this documentary for you?
I grew up mostly in Jasmine's territory, actually in Siksika's territory, and we lived, you know, meters away from the Nechaco River. And as I was invited to be a part of this film, you know, it was an area that obviously is near and dear to my heart, having my family there, having grown up around near the Nechaco. But I realized there was so much that I didn't know about the territory, that I didn't know about the river. There was a lot I did and a lot I didn't know. So, you know, as I was meeting people and getting to know, you know, understand what the story was going to be about, I think all of us realized, like, you know, the central role, like the center of the heart of the story is the river, you know, and efforts of community of Jasmine and many others over the many years to save the river and restore it and protect it. So, you know, the river, the landscape, the impacts, all of that, the impacts of resource extraction, of colonial policies and what continues to happen, those, you know, that was a big part of the story.
So thinking of the Nechaco, definitely think of, you know, the major connections to, you know, being one of the largest tributaries to the Fraser River and growing up in between Tsleil-Waututh Tene territory and Siksika's in the Van Der Hoof and Prince George region. You really get to build that relationship with not only the rivers themselves, but within the entire Nechaco watershed, which comprises about one-fifth of the province of BC in terms of, you know, land base and scale. So when we're looking at a project such as the Kenny Dam and the reservoir associated with that development. It really impacted an entire region, about one-fifth of the province. And then beyond that, the interconnected river systems of, this province and the food sources that not only our region depends upon, but where they go up to spawn to, the headwater areas of, Takla Lake First Nation and others, and down to, the Pacific. So I think, making those connections in terms of impact, but also in terms of sustenance and the different connected systems, really played a role in terms of positioning where I see myself as a Yinkatane woman, as a Saika's woman within the broader Nchaka watershed, but within these interconnected systems.
So how did you navigate and sort of find that balance between telling a very legal story, but also a deeply personal story to the nation members involved?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it was a daunting challenge at first, to think about how to tell this story, because it's many, many stories, and it's a very long history. But we were Lantern Films, and the one of the producers, Jessica Hallenbeck, was approached by Saikas, by the nation, to make this film. And it was happening at a time when the court case was happening, and I think that arguments were getting they were preparing arguments for the Supreme Court, the BC Supreme Court. And so the time was right to really tell that story, and this court case was really significant, and really precedent setting in a number of ways. And the communities, Stellaten and Saikas, they came together and agreed that this was something they wanted to tell. So we kind of started looking at the court case as like the backbone, a way of like connecting all these different pieces. And then, through lots of meetings in community, through being able to get access to a lot of the archives and those materials, especially recordings of elders and these interviews that have been done from like the early 80s, we were able to sort of really situate this story along kind of a historical continuum, but also have it really be grounded in really specific voices of folks, that were involved in leadership positions, like Chief Archie Patrick and former and Chief Jackie Thomas, and of course Jasmine is a really key part of this story as well. So we were really fortunate to have folks in community who had these incredible this incredible presence on the film, and were able to share the story. So I think we were able to sort of find that. I don't know if it's a balancing, but between that sort of legal, the big legal concepts, but really grounded in that ongoing living experience that our leadership brings to these issues. Like, it's not just that they're.
When this film was being thought of and contemplated, I think it was being thought of for quite some time, for many years, as the leadership at the day. There was multiple different councils and hereditary leaders and community members throughout the years who really championed the battle for the Nachako well beyond our court journey in 2011. But I think at that time we were also engaged in other social justice issues and environmental related matters, and had affiliations prior to this legal court journey. As Liana mentioned, beyond the courtrooms and the boardrooms, our nations were collectively aligning on opposition to other developments being proposed in the region around the time we started our journey in the courts against Rio Tinto Alcan for, our pursuit to save the Nechaco River. So we had that experience as the Inca Dene Alliance, and I think, coming into shifting focus to another project that impacted our rivers, looking more closely at home with the Nechaco River. we were able to really see this as an opportunity to ensure, narrative sovereignty and our ability to tell this story about our resistance, but also our resiliency as well. We've had, with other opportunities, I guess, that have arisen around our opposition, some may have taken it upon themselves to defy, I guess, that have arisen around our opposition, but also at that same time, we were trying to ensure our ability to pursue projects that were in alignment with our community's values and our stewardship obligations as Yinka Dene people who have, responsibility and relationship with the land and the waters as well. So, taking this moment through this project, through this film journey, to ensure that our story was being told in a way. And I think Lana did an amazing job. And we had such an amazing, predominantly Indigenous crew, film crew, help us, amplify our story that we wanted to tell. And while it is navigating a very, technical precedent-setting case, it also, help advance the film making industry in the process as well. So while we were able to tell our story, we were able to ensure that, other Indigenous communities can ensure that, that sovereignty, that narrative sovereignty piece is considered, but also associated benefits with telling our story.
You touched on again some of these points that I was hoping to address, which I guess I might just kind of very pointedly ask, what effect do you think, or that you know, or that you've heard feedback that you've gotten from members of the Saikuz Nation or Stalatin Nation, if once this documentary was out, what effect or what change did it have for members of those nations?
So, one of the other layers that we were able to include in this film was developing an impact campaign. There's multiple major projects being proposed within the region, but also utilizing it as a tool to engage with not only our members of our respective communities of Stalatin and Saikas, but also within the broader non-Indigenous communities as well, the Vanderhoof community, the Fraser Lake, everywhere else, all the way to Kitimat. So it really did help raise, greater awareness about that. But it also allowed for conversations to occur around food sovereignty, impacts to health and well-being and racism, systemic racism, and having those difficult conversations around settler colonialism. So these types of conversations were able to kind of pull from different themes of the film, which you hear brought out by the different characters that are highlighted. And as Liana mentioned, there's just a few folks that are highlighted in this film, but there's multiple generations of community members and leadership who have been raising these issues for many years. And I think it really does offer the opportunity to have those conversations, not just in the courtrooms and the boardrooms, but in the classrooms and the workspaces and, out on the land where a lot of these industrial activities are happening, at the operational level.
Yeah, we had a screening before the premiere of the film last year in Vanderhoof for community members. And it was the most nervous I've been through the whole process because, this was the audience that I most wanted to be okay with what they were seeing on the screen. And the response was amazing. And there were just two things in particular. One of the community members whose relative they heard through the archival recordings, was so emotional and so moved by being able to hear the voice of their relative. And I just and then I had a family member who was there too, who just spoke to me a number of times, called me actually a couple of days later to talk about how highly he thought of the film and how good it was to see our people on the screen in that way.
Yeah, I think there are, regardless of our geographical situations, we are still connected within these different watershed systems and, the broader climate connections, and I think there's still opportunities for us to collectively, question the systemic racist platforms that are advancing, different processes, different laws and legislation that aren't in alignment with our collective wellness and stewardship obligations that we have, whether we're Indigenous or non-Indigenous. I think there's still the opportunity to ensure that, principles like the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, that those are still being considered in amongst the broader Canadian public and whichever watershed system you might be in, because those implications can affect anyone. When projects aren't done in a good way, led by those people who have been stewarding those resources for millennia. So I think, we can continue to question these systems that continue to do harm, and work with Indigenous peoples to identify and advance solutions that we are creating, because I think many of our communities and First Nations communities, we're not always against developments or trying to impede certain things. We just want to ensure that, there's systems that are in place, that they're being done in a good way, that they're in alignment with our values and our principles, and can meet objectives that benefit all of us.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And that's, very similarly, what I was thinking was one of the main things that I was thinking through the making of this film throughout over the years was how remarkable it is. I think that the nations are doing this work, for the nations and for their membership, but for the good of all of, the communities and the systems and structures, because we've always had this understanding that our waters are connected, our lands are connected, that what happens in one part of our watershed is going to affect other parts. And so the restoration and the stewardship of that is really crucial for the health and well-being of everyone. I just don't think we can tolerate these really policies that are ruining us anymore, and work together to figure out a good way forward. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to watching this documentary in a room full of people, whether they're seeing it for the first time or if they've seen it before here in Smithers. And I just thank you so much both for taking the time out of your extremely busy schedules to speak with me.
Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.